One near and far and in between. Did everybody see the cloud show out there this afternoon?
So good.
Amazing, huh? Mm-hmm. Against the mountains, the dark and the light. You know, what would it be if we didn't ever have any clouds? Boring. Yeah, just blue sky all the time. You know, we complain about our gray, but what would it be if we didn't have any clouds? You know, that's the analogy they use for enlightenment and delusion, right? You know, if there were no clouds, no storm clouds, how'd we even experience what it's like without them? You know. made me think that today because the clouds are just so gorgeous. You know, but sometimes they're scary. Sometimes they shoot lightning at us and sometimes they blow us around in the wind and we want them to calm down and leave us alone. So maybe that's a little bit relevant to tonight's talk. We'll see. So this is the fourth installment of this Dharma seminar series that I'm calling What Does Love Have to Do with Zen? And the earlier talks are posted on the website if anyone wants to catch up. What we've been doing is looking at Buddhist perspectives and Zen perspectives on perspectives and practices of love, on love, as well as contemporary psychological understandings of how we develop the capacity for loving relationships, which is natural to us, that capacity. But it gets constricted and it gets impeded, that natural flow of mutual care and affection. So we've been looking at some of the ways that happens. And the other thing we've been doing is doing some of what I think of as heart practices in Buddhism, the Brahmaviharas, or the four immeasurables, which are, as you know, metta, loving-kindness, karuna, compassion, mudita, joy, and upekkha, equanimity. And I really appreciate that Thich Nhat Hanh, the great Vietnamese Zen teacher, I appreciate his insight that all four of those are actually needed together, working in complementary ways together to support being able to live and express love fully. And in the course of these weeks, we've been kind of, or approximately following the classical way to practice these qualities of loving kindness, compassion, etc. Take metta, loving kindness, for example. You would start with yourself using the phrases of loving kindness. May I be well in body and mind. May my heart be at ease. May I be safe from harm. And you can, of course, create your own phrases. Those are just some examples. And then you extend to someone who is easy to care for. You know, someone, a dear friend or a mentor. Usually not a family member, because usually our relationships with family members are a little more complicated than that. And then a very interesting practice is to extend metta to a neutral person. Somebody you maybe see occasionally, maybe a barista at the local coffee shop or someone in a class that you're taking and you really don't know much about them. You don't have much of a positive or a negative charge around them. And when you do these practices for a while, I mean, if you're in a retreat situation where you're really doing these in a more concentrated way, and you do that for the neutral person, after a while they feel very dear to you, you know? Even though you still don't, you hardly know anything about them, but they feel very, it's a sweet practice. And then you can sort of do that. I do that. I do sort of street metta, right? You know, just even with our masks, you can do eye metta, right? And just extending that, just a sense of goodwill and non-harming and wishing well to people. I do it with dogs. You know, dogs coming up and I beam out little these little goodwill things. And dogs respond better than people. But people do too. They might not show it. They might be too shy. You can do street metta. You can also do street compassion, of course, you know, riding on the bus. Right? Instead of shutting yourself away in your phone, reach out just quietly, just as you sit there. Not no one need even know that you're doing Buddhist practice right there on the bus. And so once you've kind of tenderized your heart by practicing loving kindness and compassion in those ways, actually, backing up, let's do a little. Let's just do a little for a little warm up, a little metta warm up. So please sit comfortably. It's very important always to sit comfortably when you're doing these practices, not to be in physical pain when you do these practices. And usually we do them with eyes closed, but it's up to you. And let's just for these few minutes, just settle into presence with your body and your breath. Maybe feel your heart center. You can even put your hand there just to feel connected to your heart center. Feel the warmth there as you breathe. And then I'll just say a few of the metta phrases and maybe some of the compassion phrases too. And then we'll just take a few more minutes for you to choose some for yourself. May I be safe from harm. May I be healthy in body and mind. May my heart be at ease. May I be free from pain and sorrow. May I be free from fear. May I be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. Just take another minute or two and repeat to yourself any phrases that feel particularly meaningful to you right now in your life. Ding. Thank you, everyone, for doing that, just even that little time. Could someone pass the inking bell jump sheet around? You can just keep pass it around till it comes to me. I will need it. Thank you. So that's how we start to tenderize our heart towards ourselves, and then gradually extending to others, until eventually we come to the difficult people in our lives. Not only the difficult people, but people who have caused harm in our lives and in the world. And it's not too hard to come up with possibilities, is it? In our lives and in the world. So that's going to be our focus for today. Many religious traditions ask us to love those who are hard to love. So I'm just going to read you a few examples. This is a lovely little book. It's called One Heart, Wisdom from the World's Scriptures. And so it takes all different little themes and gives you quotes from different religions. So, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. So that's from the Christian New Testament. Requite evil with good, and the one who is your enemy will become your dearest friend. And that's from the Quran. Hate is not conquered by hate. Hate is conquered by love. This is the eternal law. So that's from the Dhammapada, the Buddha, the words of the Buddha. If your enemies are hungry, give them food to eat. If they are thirsty, give them water to drink. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all offenses. Both of those are from Proverbs from the Hebrew Old Testament. Of what good is perfect goodness if it does not do good to all, even to those who have done painful things to others? That's from a Hindu text called the Tirukural, which I have not heard of. Humanity overcomes inhumanity the way water overcomes fire. From a Confucian text. And the wise are good to people who are good. They are also good to people who are not good. This is the power of goodness, from the Tao Te Ching. So that sets the bar pretty high, doesn't it? It's not so easy to love our enemies, is it? And you might say, oh, I don't have any enemies, but but I'll bet you have somebody in your life who's hard to love. Sometimes, at least sometimes. And even our dearest, and you know, are hard to love sometimes, you know, when they've hurt our feelings, right? Because we're very self-centered. And that's our nature. So that's why if we're going to have, back up, I'm going to say that in a minute. I wanted to say that although this sets the bar really high for us, it's also quite inspiring that so many different world spiritual traditions have recognized the futility of opposing hatred with hatred, which just fuels cycles of violence and vengeance that go on for centuries, as we can observe, right, in our world. And also how many traditions recognize the mysterious power of love to heal the wounds of the heart. So, and this is what I was going to say next, is that if we are going to have the kind of resilience and openness to extend this heart of compassion and care to those who are difficult to love, to even to those who have caused harm to us or others. There are some capacities that we'll need to cultivate. And first is the capacity to be present with the different kinds of strong emotions that arise in us when we turn our attention to someone who has been hurtful. Right? Those of you who were here last week will remember we talked about the kind of core grievances that form in us in our childhood, from when the experience, the hurts that we've experienced in childhood. Some examples of those sort of core grievances might be, you don't respect me. You never really listen to me. You don't see my goodness. That kind of thing, you know? Yeah. And we become invested in these grievances. All kinds of defensive behaviors congeal around them. And we hang on to them so tightly, even when they actually sabotage our relationships, because they make us feel strong and in control. John Wellwood, I keep bringing up this book because it's quite good, is really insightful about this dynamic. He says, we all harbor our own chosen trauma about not getting enough love, and our story about the bad other who has wronged and deprived us. And often it's a legitimate story as far as it goes. Our story about the bad other generates fear, suspicion, resentment, distrust, or aggression that inevitably pushes others away and undermines our relationships, thereby reconfirming the old belief that we're not loved or lovable. Thus, we keep reenacting the child's original love trauma by continually generating fresh evidence that the world is indeed a loveless place. So sort of a self-fulfilling grievance. So these old grievances and the feelings associated with them are likely to surface when we turn our attention towards goodwill or love or compassion towards those hurtful people, the people we believe have harmed us. So it's important to be able to recognize our long-held grievances and feel their effects if we're going to loosen our grip on them. Even a little. Even a little. And those feelings that attend our grievances are likely to be feelings we'd rather not have. Like grief, shame, anger, fear, anxiety. I don't remember how many years ago, but I did a whole series, Dharma seminar series, on the feelings we'd rather not have. How to practice with those, that list. So we can only just touch on it. We've just had this evening. But the key is being able to be fully present with our own embodied experience. To stay with it and allow it to shift and change and open. Allowing it to arise and allowing it to pass. Without judging, without trying to change or fix it, without trying to suppress or push it away, also not feeding it, getting caught in it, identifying with it or analyzing it, just being with. Being with, spaciously, like the sky holds the storm cloud as it passes. Being with, also with care and kindness, like a mother holding a child in distress. That's how we need to be with those unpleasant states. And that allows us to start to soften our grip even a little bit on grievance. Profound grief may arise with that feeling of being unloved. You know, we really touch into it. Or fear, immobilizing fear. Or anger. You know, this little volcano of anger can arise. Or a strong urge to distract or soothe ourselves with the many addictive options that our culture and society offer us. So what arises will depend on our most likely conditioned reaction to threat. You know, it varies. But fight, flight, or freeze, and all the variations thereof. But whatever arises, whatever state, to the extent that we are able to meet it with full presence, with patience, and with kindness, we will expand our capacity to be present with those difficult people in our lives, with goodwill, even compassion. Miriam Greenspan is a therapist who has, I think, some Buddhist practice as well, wrote a book called Healing Through the Dark Emotions, The Wisdom of Grief, Fear, and Despair, which is quite a good book. I would recommend it. And she gives us a very simple three-step process for practicing with the difficult, painful emotions. Attending, befriending, surrendering. Kind of cute, you know, easy to remember. Attending, befriending, surrendering. And she goes into a lot more detail than I can tonight, but those three. Attending means paying attention, right? Pausing, learning to listen to yourself, just stopping, check in. You know, body, what's, you know, how do I feel in my body? What's my kind of emotional tenor? What's the, there's another word. That sense of the emotional state, you know, hot or cool or contracted. Yeah, how does that feel? And what's the cognitive, the narrative going on. So just that check-in with yourself. Body, emotion, narrative. Just pausing to be present. So that's the attending. And then the befriending is the not judging, you know, the patience, the kindness towards that state. Being a little curious, you know, being a good observer of yourself. Befriending. And then the surrendering is not a giving up. That's not the sense of surrender here. It's the releasing, the letting go. And this is not to set up an expectation that you're going to just let go of your grievances all at once, once and for all. But gradually, repeatedly, softening their grip on you, your grip on them. Attending, befriending, and surrendering, letting go. So when you're actually doing metta practice for a difficult person, opening your heart to them, you might be aware of some sort of contraction, right? A feeling state arising. You check, oh boy, I don't feel very much loving kindness, right? I feel a little scared or angry, you know. So, and often scratch the surface of anger, and often there's shame or grief. Often anger is kind of a front for something a little bit deeper. Some people get really angry if they feel shamed. Some people don't want to feel grief, so they'll feel anger. So it's always worth just kind of going a little deeper with these. So you're doing your metta practice, and then you notice, oh, contraction, oh. And again, not to judge or manipulate, depending how strong it is, just to note, recognize, ground yourself in your breath and body, and continue your practice, if you can do that. But if it's a strong arising, then don't keep trying to make yourself feel loving kindness for the difficult person. Attend to yourself. Shift back to metta for yourself and compassion for yourself. Full presence with your own experience. And just sit with a quiet, accepting presence. And allow and see what happens with that feeling. And it'll, you know, it will subside. So it's very important when you're doing these practices, whether formally or informally, to adjust the intensity and the duration of the practice according to your own state, your state of your own heart, so that you don't become overwhelmed. Because that's not going to help. Just like a good doctor or a nurse will monitor the medication and titrate the amount depending on the effect and the reaction. So you've got to do that for yourself when you're doing these heart practices. You've got to just keep noticing and adjust. You need to be stable and grounded enough to do the practice. So that if you're getting into a state of agitation, then you attend to that, right? So you start in small doses, right? Or in a retreat situation where you're well supported. So the intent of these practices is not to reach a sort of unreachable goal of perfect love and compassion, you know, to be the perfect bodhisattva, much as we might wish to. But that's, you know, we don't want to set up a kind of set ourselves up for frustration and a judgment when obstacles arise, but to fold those obstacles right into the practice, yeah? To bring that patient attention and awareness to the state of our heart and allow it gradually to open and soften and sometimes close. You know? So let's try that a little. Okay, so again, make sure you're sitting comfortably. And I'm going to invite you, if you wish, to choose a somewhat difficult person in your life. Please, for the purposes of this just short practice, don't pick somebody who has really hurt you badly. Just a somewhat difficult person in your life, okay? Someone, that, you know, where there's been maybe some hurt feelings or some annoyance. And if you like, you can just keep your eyes open and listen to get a sense of how this practice works without actually doing it. So please, you know, make sure you do what feels right for you. But if you wish, sit with your eyes closed for a few minutes and ground yourself again, as you did, in your body, making sure that you're comfortable and allowing your breath to settle into a natural rhythm. And then just see if you can bring to mind, visualize the person that you've chosen. And then I will read some phrases just to get started. And notice, as I read the phrases, notice any states that arise in you. And if there's a state, even fairly subtle, just for the purposes of this practice, a state of anxiety or anger, annoyance, just then pause for a minute. Just pause to feel it, listen to it, attend to it, recognize it with kindness. And in doing so, that you're befriending a state that you might otherwise want to push away or reinforce obsessively. Those are the two things that we tend to do, push away or spin our wheels. So instead, you be with and then surrender your attachment to it, soften your grip. Okay, so as I read this, the phrases, just notice what arises in body, heart, and mind. And it might be warm, caring feelings as well. You don't know. You never know when you do these practices. So we address the phrases to the person. May you be safe from harm. May you be happy. May you be healthy in body and mind. May your heart be at ease. May you be free from pain, hurts, and sorrow. May you be free from fear. May you be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. So just another, we'll take another minute or two and just choose phrases that are meaningful to you to extend to that person. And if a feeling arises in you that needs attending to, please give it your attention and care. Okay, thank you. Thank you for trying that with me. So if you're doing these practices, you know, we're just giving you little tastes of this practice. And some of you, I'm sure, have had more experience with these practices, and some may be newer to it. But one thing you can do if you're doing these, you know, more of this practice, if you have trouble, if you're doing metta or karuna, compassion practice for a really difficult person, and you feel your heart is really quite closed, when you visualize them as they are now, or as they were at a time when they were more harmful even than they are now, you can visualize them as very old or very young. You know, so you can go back in time and visualize them as far as you need to. If you, you know, go back to a 5-year-old or a 2-year-old or a little infant, and see how that is to do. I had a kind of spontaneous experience of this a while ago that I'm sure had its basis in my practice of doing these practices. It was probably sometime in the weeks following my mom's death of COVID in the first COVID lockdown in May of almost 2 years ago. And I was sitting in the living room, and I can't even tell you what sparked it, but it was this little, like, flame of anger at Donald Trump. It just like this little volcano in me. You know, that he had, I just done so much harm, you know, to so many. In so many ways. And it was just this fiery energy I feel in my body. It didn't even have hatred so much attached to it. It was just this energy, fierce energy. It wasn't even hatred. And then I saw Donald Trump as like this, maybe 3 or 4-year-old. Just mortified with shame. Just, because I think I had read an article about his family life growing up. Not just before, but not long before this, I had this experience. And his father was terrible to him. You know, very shaming, very, you know, achievement oriented. Anyway, I saw this little, maybe he was just even a toddler, but this little Donald Trump just full of shame. Yeah. It was quite strong. So when we're doing these practices, opening our hearts to the people who are really difficult, there are a couple of other important capacities we need to cultivate. And they are the other two Brahma Viharas of joy and equanimity that, as a whole package, give us the capacity, right? So joy, mudita in Pali, it's often called sympathetic joy because the emphasis is on gladness in the well-being of others, you know, not your personal happiness, but gladness in the well-being and happiness of others. But that doesn't mean that when you're doing that practice for somebody difficult, somebody who has done harm, that you have to feel glad about something that they feel pleasure in that is actually harmful to others. You know, something that's motivated from their greed or, that actually is something that's harmful. No, you don't have to feel glad about that. What you do is, for example, the obscene and ill-begotten wealth of a Donald Trump. No, you don't have to feel glad about that. If it's someone you know well enough, you can identify some little seed, some area of their life where they do feel a true joy. You know, it might be their grandchild, or a moment of peace sitting by a riverside. Or if you don't know the person, you can imagine them having a moment of joy and peace in that way. of true joy. So that's how you do the practice for some, for the difficult person. There's also a type of joy called appreciative joy, where you feel deep appreciation for your own well-being and the gifts of your life. So you can wish that for yourself and for others. So the practice of joy, you know, like compassion, if you get really focused on like trying too hard, you know, really hard to be compassionate, it can become heavy, right? It can become overwhelming. You need the balance of joy and equanimity. Joy infuses loving kindness and compassion with energy and lightness, right? When the pain of the world is too heavy, you have to make a little extra effort to open to joy. And then equanimity, upekkha in Pali, is the capacity to remain steady and grounded and not constantly blown this way and that by the eight worldly winds. Pleasure and pain, loss and gain, praise and blame, fame and disrepute, right? We really don't want that one, we really do want this one. And then we're blown back and forth, or pushed and pulled between disappointment when things don't go the way we want and exhilaration when they do go the way we want. So that's equanimity. It doesn't mean indifference. I like to make a distinction between detachment, unfeeling detachment, and non-attachment. So equanimity supports a caring, compassionate heart, right? It helps us not to be attached to the outcome. Well, I was doing all that metta practice for you, why are you still mean to me? Yeah, that's not how it works. It's not about our agenda for how we would like that, how we want that person to be towards us. Although, I heard an amazing story about a woman who really practiced metta towards her supervisor or boss, her difficult boss, who was also a woman. And over a period of weeks, if not months, their whole relationship changed. Completely changed. They became friends. And it wasn't because she did some kind of like magic spell on this on her boss. I suspect it was through softening her own heart, opening her own heart, that everything from her body language to her tone of voice, to the way she listened, to the way she spoke, changed, and that there was a response. Now, this is no guarantee, right? But and we can't go into it with the agenda to change a person. But we can change ourselves. We can change ourselves. So that's the practice, is how we heal our own hearts doing this. So we can wish for our difficult person to experience joy, right? We can wish for them to experience equanimity, knowing that if they could experience joy and equanimity, they would do less harm in the world, right? So let's do a little joy and equanimity practice before we close. So once again, please sit comfortably and close your eyes. And as I read these phrases, see how they resonate within you. You're going to start with yourself. May I nourish the seeds of joy and happiness in myself. May I be undisturbed by the comings and goings of events. The blowing of those eight worldly winds. May I see myself deeply with the eyes of love and understanding. So now, once more, bring to mind your difficult person. Person you chose. And just as you wish these things for yourself, they too, somewhere deep inside, wish for true joy and happiness. They too wish to be free from suffering. And so extending your wish for them, may you nourish the seeds of joy and happiness in yourself. May you be undisturbed by the comings and goings, the blowing of the eight worldly winds. May you see yourself deeply with the eyes of love and understanding. May you see yourself deeply with the eyes of love and understanding. So thank you again for trying even that little bit. These are just little bits. But feel free to use these practices creatively. You can do them formally in retreat, but you can also, you know, really just use them in your daily life, or do, you know, even just, you know, maybe 5 or 10 minutes of your home sitting period at the close of the day or the beginning of the day. Please be creative. Next week will be our last. And we're going to practice the widest and deepest kind of love, what Vipassana teacher Sharon Salzberg calls a heart as wide as the world. Because what the world needs now is love, sweet love. That's the only thing that there's just too little of. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. Not just for some, but for everyone. And I don't know the verse. That's just the chorus of an old song. So we'll come back next week and do Metta for the World. Thank you, everybody. And what we could do, I'm going to stop.